Eleanor, Jackie, Abigail. As our next guest writes in a new book, these are the famed first ladies who don't need their husband's surnames for the public to know who they are. They've made a mark on history on their own terms.
But why doesn't that happen more often with more first ladies, especially when you consider the truth of their remarkable lives? Take, for example, the other Mrs. Adams, Louisa Catherine Adams, wife to John Quincy Adams for 50 years.
She is the only foreign first lady in American history. She was so respected that when she died in 1852, the U.S. Congress adjourned for her funeral.
But little is known about the formidable woman in this branch of the Adamses of Massachusetts. Our guest, Jim Taylor, set about to correct that. He's editor-in-chief of the Adams Papers at the Massachusetts Historical Society and co-editor of the new book, A Traveled First Lady, Writings of Louisa Catherine Adams. And he joins us now in the studio. Welcome to the program.
Thanks.
So first of all, tell us, the book is remarkable, and I'm going to quote a little bit of some of what she's written, Louisa Catherine Adams has written over time. But before I do that, tell us more about her. How is it that she's the only foreign-born first lady of the United States?
Actually, her father was an American merchant who did business in London for about 25 years, and she and all of her 8 siblings were born in London.
Okay. And so then how did she end up meeting John Quincy Adams?
Her father, Joshua Johnson's house, was a very popular spot for Americans in England at that time. And John Quincy Adams was in the Netherlands as a diplomat, and he stopped by the house to be entertained along with a lot of other young men, and he fell for Louisa.
He fell for Louisa. Okay. So we're going to get a little bit into the nature of their relationship in the public eye versus what's revealed in her papers. But you're the editor in chief of the Adams Papers at the Massachusetts Historical Society. So how much of her writings, her journals, her letters exist to this day?
Quite a bit, although there are some real blank spots. For example, we don't have anything about her time in the White House. Much of her writing was done retrospectively. Some of the things she wrote about, for example, when she wrote about her childhood, she did this 40 years after the fact. So it was sort of looking back.
And she, in fact, for some of her memoirs, she never intended them for publication, only what, for her children to read.
This was for her children. And part of this had to do with the fact that she felt as though maybe her family didn't have the reputation that she had hoped, and certainly not one to match the Adamses.
Why?
One of the problems she had is just about the time that she married John Quincy Adams, her father had a tragic business failure.
And that actually ended up haunting her for much of her life.
That haunted her, and I think some of the other people at the Adams Papers believe that one of the motivations for some of her writings was to sort of resurrect the reputation of her family, especially her father.
Right. And it's interesting because even in the title, and I can't pinpoint the exact title here, but in one of them, I think it's something like a record of a life of a nobody or something like that?
Yeah, we're not really sure if she was being ironic or if she really meant that.
Okay. Well, it's interesting because her writing style is sort of, what is it? It's both creative, it's insightful, it's frank in the
right, in
the way that we've come to presume that the Adamses do write, even though she married in.
Right. It's interesting writing, not only for the information it conveys, but it also, it's a little gossipy in some areas. She was a superstitious person to a certain extent. She commented on everybody from her servants to the royal families in Europe that she knew well.
Right. Well, I mean, I've got an example here in front of me, and it's after her marriage to John Quincy Adams when she arrives in Quincy, Massachusetts, and it was her first trip, I believe, at all to the United States, right?
Right. She hadn't been to the United States until she arrived in 1801.
Okay. And so her initial impression of Quincy, Massachusetts, she writes, "What shall I say of my impressions of Quincy? Had I stepped into Noah's Ark, I do not think I could have been more utterly astonished. The qualifications necessary to form an accomplished Quincy lady were in direct opposition to the mode of life which I had led." So it doesn't sound she was terribly impressed when she got here.
Well, you have to consider that before she came to Quincy, She had been in a fairly wealthy family in London. She had been at the court of Berlin, the Prussian court. She had been, as she said, a traveled lady.
Mm-hmm. Did she ever end up feeling like she fit in into Boston society?
Maybe Boston society a little bit. She lived in Boston not most of the time that she was in Massachusetts. But I don't think, and Henry Adams, her grandson, mm-hmm. didn't think that she ever fit in,
right.
that she was always an exotic.
Was part of that because it seems as if much of her relationship, or at least part of her relationship with, you know, the towering figure of her mother-in-law, Abigail Adams, it was a little fraught.
I think she was overwhelmed by Abigail, as many people were. At one point, reflecting years later, she said that Abigail was the planet about which everything else revolved.
Uh-huh. And so how did Abigail Adams view Louisa Catherine Adams?
Abigail wanted the best for John Quincy. John Quincy was the child that was destined from a very early age, and she wanted the best for John Quincy Adams. I think at first, because Louisa had a very sheltered life, elite family, she didn't know how. That's one of the things that Quincy threw her. About is that she didn't really know how to manage a household. She'd always had servants. Everything had been done for her. And I think this is one of the things that Abigail overawed her with, was her ability to do things. And I think from Abigail's point of view, she referred to her as a special lady.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's revealed in the collection of letters and diaries that there seemed to be some difficulty between Abigail, or at least initially, and Louisa Catherine Adams, when Abigail decides to keep two of Louisa's sons here in Massachusetts while John Quincy and Louisa Catherine went off to Europe.
Yeah, this is one of the things that really disturbed Louisa and haunted her over the years. Two of her sons, George Washington Adams, who was 8 years old at this time, and John Adams II, who was about 6 years old at this time, Abigail and other members of the family, without consulting Louisa, decided that when John Quincy took his appointment to St. Petersburg, that those boys would remain in Massachusetts for their education. Mm. What this meant was she went 6 years without seeing her two elder sons.
And it, I mean, that must have come at great difficulty.
Very, very great difficulty years later. And also, both of these sons grew up with difficulties. George Washington Adams died, unfortunately, either a suicide or fell accidentally off a ship when he was about 29 years old. The other son died young as an alcoholic.
Wow. Listeners, I'm speaking with Jim Taylor. He's editor-in-chief of the Adams Papers at the Massachusetts Historical Society and also co-editor of the new book, A Traveled First Lady, Writings of Louisa Catherine Adams, who was the wife of John Quincy Adams. And, you know, we're talking about her writings. I want to just read another little tiny excerpt here that just tickled me to no end as I was looking at it. And that's her assessment, Louisa Catherine Adams' assessment of Thomas Jefferson. Because in the book, you quote her recalling that, quote, his countenance indicated strongly the hypocrisy of his nature, and all about him, his smile and his actions indicated a sort of tricky cunning, that sure attendant of a sophisticated mind, devoid of a strong basis of substantial principle. That is not the typical, description of one of the founding fathers of the United States.
She didn't particularly care for Thomas Jefferson for a couple of reasons, but I think one of it is, during that time, the Adamses and the Jeffersons were not the best of friends. But I think in addition to that, when her father fell on hard times, John Adams was president, and he got an appointment in the government for him to sort of tide him over. But when Thomas Jefferson became president, he undid that position, and her father was destitute.
Uh-huh.
So part of it was she's, in a sense, blamed Jefferson for some of her father's financial problems.
Interesting. Now, what role did she play? I mean, she was first lady. And it's interesting because she had had all that experience in courtly society in Europe, you know, London, Paris, etc. So what role did she play in terms of the John Quincy Adams White House?
I don't know that much about her, other than we know that she was a great entertainer. One of the problems with our information is that she did not leave a diary for the White House years.
Right.
What was very significant about her and John Quincy Adams' career was that John Quincy Adams was not an exciting person. As a matter of fact, there's a famous saying that one of the diplomats, when they saw him in action with other diplomats in Europe, that he said that he was like a bulldog among spaniels, and this is pretty much his social ability. He was a hard man. One of the things she did is she brought a softness. She was the entertainer who could bring people into their home, and during the period that he was Secretary of State and lusting after the presidency, she was the person who helped to socialize and bring people, particularly Congress people, into their home.
Oh, interesting. So the art of politics there,
right,
through her,
right, right,
through her sort of socializing, as
right,
you say,
and
of her husband.
This is a role that is very typical, I think, of many political wives, particularly the wives of men who aspire to be president.
Right. And what about the nature of their relationship itself? Because I see that historians, including Richard Norton Smith, have described their relationship as elusive, distressing, and stormy. But that's not really borne out in Louisa Catherine Adams' own writings.
No. One of the things that I think have decided upon finishing reading all of her work and editing it was that John Quincy Adams was a very human and loving father and husband. They had their tiffs. Part of it was that she was dragged all over the world because of his career. And even when he came back to this country, he never retired. And that was one of the things that I think bothered her a little bit. He was a public man. He had to be a public man, which means that they were back and forth between Massachusetts and Washington all the time.
Mm. And finally, I mean, I think one of the most compelling things about having read the book and the writings of Louisa Catherine Adams is that until I opened it, I knew virtually nothing about her. Why is it that you think that she, in particular, sort of fell out of history's eyes, even though, as we noted in the beginning of our conversation, when she died, Congress adjourned to observe her funeral?
I think it's the rush of history. She was very popular at that time, socially popular. If you go back and try to remember the activities, the reputation of 19th century first ladies, you know the name Martha Washington, but you really don't know very much about Martha Washington. Do you know the name Dolly Madison? She was an entertainer at the White House. You know Mary Todd Lincoln. Mm. She had difficulties. But you really don't know these people unless they make a mark,
right,
like Eleanor or now Hillary. They sort of just slip away.
Or Michelle,
right,
now.
Right, right. But she's
well.
Current.
She's current.
Current.
That's true. She's in the public eye every day today. Well, Jim Taylor is the editor-in-chief of the Adams Papers at the Massachusetts Historical Society and co-editor of A Traveled First Lady, The Writings of Louisa Catherine Adams. He and his co-editor will be at the Massachusetts Historical Society tomorrow to talk about the book. There are more details at our website, radioboston.org. Thank you so much for coming in, and thank you for illuminating the life of this particular First Lady.
My pleasure.
And listeners, stay with us. There's an army of women working in the restaurant industry, but celebrity chefs are predominantly male. So what do women chefs have to do to get their time in the spotlight? Stay with us. We're going to talk about that. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.